When I decided to talk about genetic engineering, it's kind of a yawn subject for a whole lot of people. Oh, ho-hum, genetic engineering. But you need to know it's starting to affect every bite of food that's going into your mouth if you're eating out. 70% of all the prepared foods in the grocery store has genetically engineered materials in it. We don't know that it's not safe, but we sure as heck don't know that it's safe. And so I'd like to propose a set of facts and information about genetic engineering. The thing that I call, after Jeffrey Smith's book, Seeds of Deception. Because the industry and the government has lied to us about the safety of genetic engineering and the foods that have come about as a result. You know, what do genetically modified seeds have to do with democracy? Well, everything. Because you need to be able to at least know what it is that you're eating. Francis Moore LePay, who wrote the milestone book Diet for a Small Planet and its follow-through series, did the foreword on Jeffrey Smith's book, speaking to the fact that we need to be able to have a choice, that there has been an assault on democracy when we affect the food chain. And as we look to the future of the world, it's not going to be the people who have the greatest, biggest bombs. It's not going to be the people who have the most sophisticated computer hacking equipment. It's going to be the people that are holding the bag of seeds that are going to make the difference. There's going to be nothing more important as far as the future of the planet is concerned than people who control the food industry and people who control water. And so since 1996, when genetically engineered crops were introduced, barely 15 years ago, it was embraced as if it was a silver bullet for the food system. The industry promised us that biotechnology was environmentally responsible and that it was a way for farmers to feed a growing global population. But it turns out that genetically engineered plants and animals do not perform better than their traditional counterparts, and they raise a lot of health, environmental, and ethical concerns. You know, this green revolution that's promised that technology is going to make sure we have food security and it's going to, you know, change what happens with climate change, but it absolutely has not delivered. And so the three groups that we have to hold up to look to and look at in terms of not performing to protect the American public are the FDA, the USDA, and the EPA. That's the Food and Drug Administration, the Department of Agriculture, and the Environmental Protection Agency. These three agencies have put both human and environmental health at risk by inadequately reviewing genetic engineering and genetically engineered foods. You know, we want to remember that it just wasn't very long ago that barely 1% of all of the acreage that existed in the United States had genetic engineering done on it. Now we're up to 165 million acres. 10% of all the genetically engineered food, 10% of all of the cropland that's in the United States currently is growing genetically engineered food. And so we've gone from over 150 million acres. This year, in 2011, it is suspected that we're going to be close to 400 million acres of genetic engineering in 29 countries around the world. That's 10% of all the global cropland. And the United States is the world leader with that 165 million acres being planted. That's half of the global production of genetically engineered food is happening here in the United States. Only 7% of soybeans and 1% of corn were genetically engineered 15 years ago in 1996 when it was introduced. now 94% of soybeans and 88% of corn that's planted in the United States in calendar 2011 is genetically engineered. Now, why does that matter to you? You can't eat a meal in a restaurant. You can't eat a prepared food without having one of those two ingredients in it, absolutely bar none. And you say, well, Eve, I don't eat soybeans, and I don't eat tofu, and I don't drink soy milk, and I don't use soy analogs like phony bologna. But what's true is soy oil is the most commonly used oil in the United States. And 94% of the soybeans are genetically engineered. You can bet it's showing up in your soy oil, in your salad dressing, in your mayonnaise, in your prepared foods. So unless you're buying organic, you're getting genetically engineered food. You know, I would love to eat 100% organic every single solitary day. I'm very committed to eating organically. But I travel and teach. And when I fly, I'm always packing my lunch. I've got my turkey sandwich out in the car right now for lunch today. But when I stay in hotels over several days, I can't pack all of my food. I visit friends. I go out to dinner. I ate at a potluck last night. So even when I make an effort to eat as much organic as possible, I can't eat 100% organic. You know, when you think about genetically engineered foods, what we first have to do is identify them. There are three broad categories of genetically engineered foods. And, you know, what we're talking about fundamentally in the United States is soybean, corn, cotton, and canola. Those are the four major crops at this point that are genetically engineered. What happens in genetic engineering is that we transfer a gene trait from one organism into the embryo of another. Then that is a transgenic animal. And we're going to talk before the show is over about the salmon that are genetically engineered and the pigs that are genetically engineered. But when we transfer this gene information from one species to another, they even had a genetically engineered tomato that they put a fish gene in order to make it frost resistant. Well, the reason that fish have fish oil in them is because it's their antifreeze. So they took the gene that regulated that and transferred it into a tomato. But what happened when people who had seafood allergies bit into the tomato? They're exposed inadvertently to an allergen in the tomato. And the real point of this entire show is that genetically engineered foods aren't labeled. You can't know that Flavor Saver is in fact a genetically engineered tomato because our federal government does not require that they be labeled. So the three broad categories that genetic engineering addresses are crops that have traits to deter pests and disease. You know, they put something into the gene mix to try to keep a critter from taking a bite out of that food. They try to put a gene in that keeps a particular kind of bacteria or mold from thriving on that food. There are also crops that are genetically engineered that have what are called value-added traits. Golden rice was an example of that. They bred a gene into rice so that the rice would make beta-carotene, because we know that there is a good bit of blindness that occurs, especially in Africa, as a result of a shortage of vitamin A in the diet. So beta-carotene is pro-vitamin A. It's one step before vitamin A. And in the majority of individuals, we can take beta carotene, whether it's in a carrot or a sweet potato or a piece of papaya, and we can turn it into vitamin A. So by creating a crop with a value-added trait, by changing golden rice to be golden so that it in fact had beta carotene in it, the idea was to provide this nutritional fortification to the population that doesn't get enough vitamin A, and as a result reduce blindness. Hasn't happened yet, but that's the idea behind it. And then the third category of crops are the ones that have industrial traits so they can be used for biofuels. They've recently genetically engineered a corn that has an enzyme in it that helps to break the corn down for the use of what I call crystal eth or ethanol. You know, we have an addiction to crystal eth in this country, believing that ethanol is, you know, one of the saviors to keep us away from other carbon-based fuels. But it turns out that all the statistics that I've been able to read on it, that to manufacture ethanol actually creates more global warming than the gasoline that it replaces. The herbicide tolerant or the insect repellent foods, corn, canola, soybeans, and of course cotton, even though that isn't a food, they make up the overwhelming majority of the genetically engineered crops. But there are others that have been approved for field trial, but they're not commercially available yet, and they include rice, sugar beets, melons, potatoes, apples, petunias, millet, switchgrass, and tobacco. What has already been improved is papaya, flax, tomatoes, potatoes, and squash. They've already made it through the field trial approval overall, but they haven't yet made it to the marketplace for all kinds of reasons, some of which I'll talk about today. Then we also have, you know, recombinant bovine growth hormone. I've talked about that a good bit here on No Nonsense Nutrition because this is the stuff that I refer to as cow crack because it's given to cows. Over 70% of all the cows in the state of Florida are injected with bovine growth hormone every 2 weeks. It creates significant health problems in the animals because when these animals produce more milk, they end up with higher rates of mastitis, which is an infection in their udders. Their teats get infected from making so much milk and the milking, additional milking that's done on them. And so as a result, these cows get higher amounts of antibiotics than cows not given bovine growth hormone. And of course, our federal government, in infinite wisdom, decided not to test the effects of bovine growth hormone on humans because it's not given to humans, it's given to cows. So when the cows get bovine growth hormone 26 times a year and as a result get more antibiotics, then they create more antibiotic-resistant bacteria, which turns out to run off the manure fields and into the water supply. And that has become a growing public health problem. But one of the scarier things about bovine growth hormone, from my perspective as a licensed clinician, is that there is a growth hormone called IGF-1, and this insulin growth factor is pasteurization resistant. In other words, when you pasteurize the milk, it doesn't change the hormone, even though it might change bacteria. But when we increase IGF-1, it is linked to breast and prostate cancer. And so I wonder what's happening when we're saying, oh, drink your 3 glasses of milk every day because it's good for you, and how much we're increasing the risk of breast and prostate cancer in our kids by giving them bovine growth hormone treated milk. And so when I've talked many times before about saying what things should you absolutely get organic, I have to put dairy products on the top of the list. I have to put dairy products on the top of the list secondarily because we know now that there are genetically manufactured enzymes that are used to create hard cheese. 60% of all the hard cheese in America that was created last year was done with a genetically engineered enzyme. You know, Canada and the European Union do not allow bovine growth hormone to be used. It's never been approved for commercial use. You know, there are some places where other countries are a whole lot smarter than we are when it comes to health risk. But it really gets offensive by the time that you find out about EnviroPigs. And actually, you know, Canada did a good job by refusing to use bovine growth hormone, and then they ended up on the bottom of the pile of ethics, as far as I'm concerned, because it's a Canadian university that's developing EnviroPigs. These enviro pigs produce a particular enzyme that decreases the amount of phosphorus in the manure. Phosphorus is what ends up acting like a fertilizer. But if you change the chemical content of the enviro pig's manure, it doesn't actually reduce the total amount of manure discharges at all. You could actually just feed the pigs the enzyme instead of genetically engineering them. Does this sound like Frankenfoods to you? Genetically engineered livestock really just treat the symptoms of a poorly regulated food safety system. They do not combat disease. And supposedly these are all research animals. You know, supposedly these things are locked up like smallpox is locked up, you know, in one place inside of a safe, inside of a safe building, inside of a fence, you know, with guards around it. And yet, the Office of Inspector General reported this year that regulatory control over genetically engineered animals and insects really didn't work. They reported that between 2001 and 2003, the University of Illinois allowed at least 386 genetically engineered pigs from a study to be slaughtered and sold for human consumption, even though the genetically engineered pigs have never been approved for food consumption. So somebody out there ate a pork chop, a bacon, a rump roast, a pickled pig's foot, or something that was made from a genetically engineered animal, and we don't even know how it affects the human body. The one that really scares me is that last year the FDA considered approving the first genetically engineered fish for human consumption. Not only am I worried when we take a fish gene and stick it into a tomato, I'm worried when we take an eel gene and stick it into a fish. And this is what happened with Aqua Bounty's Aqua Advantage salmon. It combined genes from a member of the eel family with the Chinook salmon to create an Atlantic salmon that grows to market twice, market size, twice as fast. You know, it's just a super growing genetically engineered salmon. Now, Aqua Bounty, the company who is doing this work, has told the federal government that it can't guarantee that these transgenic fish will not escape from salmon farms. Now, these suckers get out of these research farms, the biotech salmon. They would be sterile, but they're voracious, so they can easily outcompete the wild fish for food, for habitat, and for mates, but then they fail to successfully reproduce because they're sterile. And so as a result, we drive wild salmon to extinction. Moreover, we want to understand that carnivorous fish and salmon are not vegetarians. Salmon are carnivorous fish. They eat other fish. What happens is when you grow them in a pen, they eat pellets made from wild fish. So you actually have to catch more wild fish to feed the genetically engineered salmon than you would to feed a regular salmon. That puts even more strain on ocean fish populations to provide feed. The USDA has approved virtually every application, 92% of all the submitted applications for genetically engineered food. And up until 2 years ago, the United States Department of Agriculture had approved 65% of every deregulation petition on genetically engineered crops that it had received. Does it sound like the industry is running the government? Well, you'd be really close if you said so. They're bioengineered pesticides. They're regulated under the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act that was first enacted way back in 1947. So all new pesticides, including those designed with, you know, the insect-resistant genetically engineered crops in mind, are supposed to demonstrate that they don't create an unreasonable adverse effect on the environment, that they don't pollute ecosystems, that they don't provide environmental or public health risks. But the real question is it safe to eat the food afterward? Well, we've got to really wonder when the International Journal of Biological Sciences showed that rats that consumed genetically engineered corn for 90 days deteriorated their kidney and their liver function. You know, corn and soybeans are really the building blocks of the industrialized food supply. Doesn't matter whether it's livestock feed or hydrogenated vegetable oils or high fructose corn syrup. This is where this stuff is getting into our cans of soda pop and our cookies and our salad dressings. Significant liver and kidney impairment was found in animals that were fed insect-resistant BT corn. Now, BT corn is when a bacteria is inserted to try a bacteria gene to try to make a crop more insect resistant. When this happens, it's a complicated situation. You know, we call this stuff Roundup Ready. And Roundup is an herbicide. And so this glyphosate chemical turns out that it can create highly abnormal deformities in all vertebrates. That's what we are. We're a vertebrate. It can cause DNA damage to human cells. Everything that is a Roundup Ready crop is using this particular herbicide. And these things were secondarily developed from the use of nerve gases in World War II. What's the real issue? Well, the potential long-term risks from eating genetically engineered food are just flat out unknown. There is not enough scientific evidence demonstrating that these foods are safe. Remember, genetically engineered varieties only became the majority of the U.S. corn crop 5 years ago. And the majority of the U.S. soybean crop 10 years ago. The potential cumulative long-term risks haven't been studied. And so this is one of the reasons that the European Union has done very little to approve the use of genetically engineered food. It's way less than a tenth of what it is that we're using in the United States. One of the companies, Aventis, created an insect-resistant corn called Starlink. And this was a dozen years ago, and it was only supposed to be used for domestic animal feed and industrial purposes because the corn hadn't been tested for allergic responses in human. But right away, Starlink was found, this particular corn was found in taco shells that were sold in the United States supermarkets. So Aventis ended up canceling the registration for Starlink and helped to remove the genetically engineered corn from the food supply. This is another cautionary tale. Just like the salmon can get out and interbreed with wild salmon, so this corn that supposedly wasn't supposed to end up in the food supply ends up in taco shells, and the pigs that supposedly weren't supposed to leave University of Illinois end up as pork chops on somebody's table. You can hear me, can't you? You can hear my concern in my voice. You can hear my alarm that your choice of eating real natural food is threatened. The FDA is the one that governs the proper labeling of U.S. food products. But the FDA does not require the labeling of genetically engineered food products as genetically engineered. It does permit voluntary genetic engineering labeling, as long as the information is not false or misleading. Do you think that any salad dressing manufacturer wants to put on the label, oh, by the way, the soy oil in here is genetically engineered? Do you think every can of soda pop wants to put on the label, oh, by the way, our high fructose corn syrup that's in this soda pop is not only going to give your kid diabetes and rot their brain, but oh, by the way, it's genetically engineered? All I'm saying is all GE food should be labeled. half of American consumers would choose not to buy genetically engineered food. 87% of U.S. consumers want the ingredients to be labeled. 95% of U.S. consumers favor mandatory labeling of meat and milk from genetically engineered animals. Wouldn't you want to know? You may be one of the people that loves technology and thinks that technology never does anything wrong. Fine. Just put a sign on the salmon that says that it's genetically engineered. Let me make my choice. The FDA will not require labeling of food that comes from genetically modified animals such as the Aqua Advantage salmon. So the next time you order salmon in a restaurant, unless that restaurant makes a claim that this is wild salmon, you won't know. And you think that's all the problems. Oh, well, strap in. In the 15 years since the herbicide-tolerant crops were first introduced, weeds have already become resistant to genetically engineered herbicides. You know, we're applying so freaking much Roundup that we have created Roundup-resistant weeds. And what that does is it drives farmers to apply even more toxic herbicides and to reduce conservation tilling to combat weeds because it doesn't do any good. There are at least 8 species of weeds in the United States and 15 worldwide that have been confirmed to be resistant to glyphosate. And they include very aggressive crop weeds like water hemp and ragweed and mare's tail. Any of you that have ever grown a garden of any size know about these weeds because you've bent over to pull them out of the ground. Purdue University is really very concerned about the staggering levels of infestation that are showing up with this weed called mare's tail. 2 years after it was first detected, even a biotech company, Syngenta, predicts that glyphosate-resistant or Roundup-resistant weeds will infest 1/4 of U.S. cropland in the next 2 years. So, when we look at Roundup-resistant ragweed, it can cause 100% crop loss. So now you're the farmer who used a genetically engineered Roundup-ready soybean, and now you've got these super weeds growing in your fields, and then you have to buy even more pesticide, herbicide, fungicide, stronger than you ever had to use before to try to kill those out, and it in turn kills your crop. The strict patents that protect genetically engineered seeds are fundamentally owned by Monsanto. 93% of all the soybeans and 80% of the corn cultivated in the United States are cultivated by Monsanto. Farmers pay a licensing fee and they sign contracts to use these genetically engineered seeds, which, by the way, are more expensive than regular seeds. So the whole idea is this was supposed to save us money because we weren't going to be spending so much money on pesticides, herbicides, and fungicides. But in fact, we pay more than triple the amount for the genetically engineered seeds in the first place. Plus, the licenses from Monsanto prohibit farmers from saving seeds from the harvested crop, as people have done around the planet for millennium, in order to plant for the next season. And, you know, the suits, there have been 112 patent infringements that I was able to find by Monsanto, where, let's say you and I have fields across the street from each other, and I plant the genetically engineered food and you don't, but my pollen from my genetically engineered food drifts across the street over into your lot, and you end up having some of those strains fertilized by my genetic pollen in your non-genetic lot. I hope all that made sense. Monsanto can sue you. They can sue you for infringing on their patent. And not only can they sue you, they can win. The thing that scared the bejabbles out of me this year was that the U.S. Department of Agriculture approved Roundup Ready alfalfa. And alfalfa is the single most important feed crop for dairy cows. But genetically engineered alfalfa can easily cross-pollinate organic alfalfa crops and can cause organic farmers to lose their market if testing reveals contamination. They could face seed piracy suits from Monsanto. This is the evil empire. Organic dairy farmers already face difficulty securing organic feed, and this will only worsen if genetically engineered alfalfa begins to contaminate organic alfalfa. Be afraid. Be very afraid. I've listened to Monsanto's myths. I've listened to the stuff that they blather out from their, you know, public service announcements, that everything Monsanto does helps make agriculture more productive and more profitable for farmers. Well, it can't make it more profitable for farmers because the seed costs $23 an acre more than conventional seed. But, you know, Monsanto is such a good guy that if, in fact, when you plant your Roundup Ready seeds, if Roundup doesn't kill all your weeds, they'll give you another $20 per acre so that you can buy the other pesticides that you need to kill the various weeds that are in your field that the Roundup didn't kill. This is nuts. You know, I go back to golden rice. I remember the first time I heard about it, I thought, you know, genetic engineering isn't all bad. There's going to be a place for this, you know, biofortification of food, you know, adding beta carotene to rice to help fight vitamin A deficiency that causes blindness and, you know, 250,000 children every year. This is a good thing, but we got a problem with that. Just because we engineer crops with a beta carotene, it may not reduce vitamin A deficiency because consumption alone doesn't ensure absorption. You know, one of the other problems that some of these populations have is the availability of fuel. They may not have enough fuel to cook the rice. Diets of malnourished people often lack the fats and the oils that are crucial to absorbing vitamin A. When they decided to do a clinical trial on golden rice to see how it affected people, they had 5 people in their study, and none of them were the compromised populations that they're trying to sell golden rice to, and golden rice costs 3 times as much as regular rice. So the very poor people who need it the most are the people who can't afford the seeds. Hello, is anybody out there listening? We need a more practical solution. You know, just growing orange-colored produce, like sweet potatoes and carrots and mangoes and dark leafy green vegetables and providing fats and oils. You know, these low-income rural families with the capacity to grow crops will spend more money on the seeds than they will if they just grow other crops that have beta-carotene in them. Monsanto says it's going to help farmers do more with less. That doesn't appear to be true. Monsanto says it squeezes more food from a raindrop. That was one of its ads. And yet, what we found is that some of these seeds and herbicides are incredibly poorly suited to poor farmers who have low output farms in developing countries and who have a hard enough time getting water in the first place. You know, when I think about the stuff that I've read about India, because half of all the pesticides applied in India are used on cotton. And unfortunately, some of these low-educated farmers over-apply the chemicals, and then they make their agricultural workers highly vulnerable to health problems as a result. But half of Indian farmers don't have any access to irrigation. They really depend on a punctual rainy season for a good crop. And we don't have anything like a punctual rainy season anymore. So then the crop fails, and then the farmer has a debt for the seed that they can't pay. And so there has been a rising number of farmer suicides in India. The numbers approached 20,000 suicides last year. That's astounding. So when we look at all these myths that Monsanto has put out, you understand why I say this is the evil empire. To believe that they're going to mitigate climate change impacts by creating crops that are going to be better for the environment, or they're going to make efficient use of all of our resources, I would tell you to have another drink. What do I want to have happen? Well, first off, I want you to know what the GE crops are. That corn and soybeans may be number one on the list, but what's going on with alfalfa and papaya and potato and rice and tomato and wheat and sugar beet and safflower, all of these are set up to become genetically engineered crops available for human consumption. So when I talk about organic being worth it, I mean it just as literally as I say it. Right now, we have a choice to avoid genetically modified organisms. Right now, when we choose organics, which by law are required to be processed without the use of genetically modified organisms, we have that choice. And we have a right to know what we're eating. There's been a coalition of 300 companies, organizations, and doctors who filed a petition with the United States Food and Drug Administration for just this reason. The coalition's goal is simply to require that all genetically engineered food be labeled and protect the consumer's right to know what's in the food they're eating. So if you agree with that, you need to send a message to the FDA. Go up on the website, Organic, It's Worth It. They'll give you an opportunity to send a message to the FDA. So when we look at what's happened just since 1996, dominating the production of corn and soybeans and cotton and canola in the United States, when we look at these Roundup Ready crops, when we look at these BT crops that are engineered to produce toxins to kill certain pests and then become resistant, those pests become resistant to BT, then we have to ask, how safe are GE foods? If there's 30 other countries around the world, including Australia, Japan, and all the countries of the European Union, that are significantly restricting or outright banning the use of genetically engineered foods because they consider that they haven't been proven safe, then why do we have the industry running our government? How widespread is it? Well, you heard my stats. We're up to 88% of all the corn and 97% of all the soybeans that are genetically engineered that were planted in the United States this year. 70% of processed foods in American supermarkets now contain GE ingredients. The United States Department of Agriculture has decided to allow the unrestricted use in alfalfa. That's got way more implications than you would ever know. A lot of people blew by that because they went, oh, alfalfa. Well, I don't eat alfalfa. Yeah, but your cows do. So how are these things going to affect human health? Well, the answer is we don't know. We have seen the effect on the liver and the kidney and the reproductive health of animals that GE foods have been used as their diet. But separate from that, let's just pretend for right now that GE foods are 100% safe for humans, that there's no problem whatsoever. We're still leading to the growth of super weeds. We're still leading to the rise of super bugs. And so, according to the research that was conducted by the Organic Center, genetically engineered crops have been responsible for an increase of 383 million pounds of herbicide in the United States alone on genetically engineered crops. Remember, if it's got the word side in it, insecticide, herbicide, fungicide, pesticide, algicide, rodenticide, it's designed to kill a living thing. Guess what you are? You're a living thing. What's the difference between a roach and you? Yeah, it's size. But you get a little bit, you get a little bit, you get a little bit. Genetically engineered foods may reduce biodiversity of animals and of weeds and may put our food security at risk. They're being used in rich countries. They're not being used for people in poorer nations. You know, South America was always decimated by the amount of forest that is cut down to grow soybeans. And that's for Europe's livestock industry. Now we're growing soybean plantations with genetically engineered soybeans all over what is essentially the lungs of the planet, the Amazon basin. Can you see the relationship that even if GE foods were 100% safe for you, they're not 100% safe for the planet? I remember when I first read in the various wisdom teachings as they talked about the future of the planet that the voice of the people would be heard in the land. And the voice of the people is being heard in terms of Occupy Wall Street. You know, to see those of you that stepped up for the Occupy Sarasota event that took place last week, the people that did the Occupy Bradenton event, the Occupy Tampa event. Do you know that there were 1,000 cities in the United States this weekend that had an Occupy protest going on? That they're looking in Tampa now for a permanent location, just like they've created on Wall Street, to send the message that some of the things that we're doing are very short-sighted. So it's not just about who has the money and who doesn't. It's not all about the bankers. It's about a viewpoint. It's about a commitment to values. And so one of the things that I value is health. Because health enables me to do everything I want to do. It's going to enable me to jump in my car after this show is over and drive like a bat up to Tampa so that I can be on WMNF at 11 o'clock. It enables me to put together this program. My health enables me to do all of the things that I want to do, whether it's play or study or sleep, whether it's involve myself with a great group of people like we had at the WSLR event last night, or whether it's to pick up the phone and call my representatives in the Senate, because frankly, I wouldn't call my representative in the House. Somehow there's an EnviroPig joke in there somewhere. But the U.S. regulatory system for genetically engineered food is flawed. If the United States Department of Agriculture is responsible for protecting crops and the environment from agricultural pests and weeds, including biotech and conventional crops, well, they failed. If the Food and Drug Administration is responsible for the labeling of foods, well, then they failed. If the Environmental Protection Agency, which regulates pesticide residue standards in foods, is allowing these tolerance levels to be affected, safe pesticide residues affected, because there's no indication of immediate risk, then they failed. And so we've got a United States Department of Agriculture, an FDA, and an EPA that are all walking on thin ice in terms of doing their job, and yet the way that our current Congress has responded is to cut their funding. Now, I'm not saying funding alone would solve the problem, but when we look at the amount of House resolutions that have come down for cutting the current federal budget, they were talking about cutting the United States Department of Agriculture meat inspections by $88 million. We just had 36 million pounds of funky turkey going out there. I almost said funky chicken. We're going to dance to it, all right. That came out of Cargill. And yet, they want to cut the meat inspection budget by $88 million at the United States Department of Agriculture, but not implement the new Food Safety Modernization Act. You know, Obama put out the Food Safety Modernization Act, only our Congress hasn't voted it through. So take action. You know, foodandwaterwatch.org is one of the sites that I use for good, reliable information. There's only a few websites that I endorse on this show. Environmentalworkinggroup.org, EWG.org, but Food and Water is definitely another one, because I find that their information is factual and can be fact-checked. The White House and the Congress are under pressure from the biotech industry, and there's no question about the fact that we continue to have individuals who want to dumb down our regulations and who want to cut budgets for protection of food and water. When I look at the federal funding for water infrastructure that's been targeted by the House, it's alarming. You know, one of the mechanisms through which federal funding is distributed to states and municipalities is for water infrastructure repairs. But they're talking about drastically reducing that under the budget, taking $1.9 billion out of the current fiscal year for maintenance, improvements, and repairs to water infrastructure. So your food supply is in jeopardy. Your water supply is in jeopardy. You know, usually here on No Nonsense Nutrition, I tell you how good an apple is for you. But today I'm going to tell you that it's only good if it's organic.